You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Cleveland Cavaliers select Darius Garland from Vanderbilt University.
My. It's called the Kevin Love Show.
Cleveland! This is for you!
Hey guys and ghouls, Evan here. Welcome to today's episode of Locked On Cavs, brought to you by the Locked On Podcast Network. Today, I am not joined by my co-host Chris Manning, but rather someone I've been looking forward to having on LOC for a while now. He's a reporter and anchor for KFBK, Sacramento's leading news, weather, and traffic station. And on top of that, he covers the Kings locally and the Philadelphia 76ers online. You can also find him on YouTube producing incredible NBA content under the moniker Sly Hooper. Also, he's one of my closest friends in the writing community, and I could go for days talking about him. Ladies and gentlemen, give it up wherever you are, wherever you're listening right now from my man, Jordan Christmas. Jordan, how's it going, buddy?
Doing good, man. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate the intro. I'm just ready to try to, if an 18-minute YouTube video wasn't enough, I guess I'm just going to try to break down this Sixer team even further than what I've already tried to do, but I'm ready to go.
Hey, man, I'm looking forward to it, and I really do appreciate you coming on the show. But as I mentioned in the opening, you've been a Sixers guy for as long as I've known you since we both started the hashtag basketball. And as of Tuesday, Philly has an overall record of 36-22, which is good enough for fifth place in the Eastern Conference. But they have a road record of 9-20 as they head in the Wednesday's game in Cleveland. Jordan, I'm going to give you the floor here. What are you looking forward to most in this matchup overall?
Just want to see the team get a road win. I don't know what it is about this team, but you can see their potential when they play teams like the Bucks or the Heat, basically any of the Eastern Conference best. But when they play teams like the Hawks, the Magic, the Wizards, eking out a close win with the Cavs earlier in the year in Philly, this team just seems to play down to the competition. And now with Ben Simmons' injury, and who knows how long he'll be out for, it's reevaluated in 2 weeks, but it's probably going to be longer. I really want to see how maybe one road win can kind of get the wheels turning a little bit and maybe, you know, get some momentum, so to speak, but without one of their best players, it'll definitely be harder. Just for some reason, this team just doesn't perform well on the road, and it shows in the stats. The stats are very stark, but also Embiid and Drummond part 500 will be really fun to watch, even though it's in a different iteration now that Drummond is on the Cavs. But I want to see the team put together just a game of good basketball, get a solid road win. I know the Cavs are gassed up because they got a win last night over the Miami Heat, so they're probably going to be coming out with some force. So we'll see how that goes, but I'm just looking for a good, just any semblance of a road win, basically.
No, man, I get that for sure. And yeah, no, Chris and I, it's really funny. And I'm sure the people who are listening to yesterday's, or, well, we're recording this on Tuesday, so Tuesday's episode, know, like, Chris and I were full on ready just to be total Debbie Downers at that Cavs Heat game, and the Cavs ended up pulling it out. But let's focus on today, Wednesday's matchup with the Sixers. And you mentioned Andre Drummond and Joel Embiid part 500, and it's a little different now that Andre is in Cleveland, but do you think there's actually like a legitimate beef between these two, or do you think it's Andre Drummond just trying to act like he's big while Joel Embiid is clearly the best center in the Eastern Conference and arguably the NBA?
I mean, I don't think there's really any beef with any of the whether it's Hassan Whiteside or Andre Drummond. I don't think there's any beef, at least on Joel Embiid's part. I mean, it's he always talks about how he just likes to talk trash and have fun. And he's basically that style of personality on the court. It's those things where it's like, if he's your teammate, you love him. But if he's on the opposing team, then you hate his guts. And I totally get that. But that type of, you know, trash talking and, you know, having fun at the expense of somebody, I would understand if maybe Andre or Hassan or Karl Anthony Towns, for that matter, they don't hold something against Embiid. But weirdly enough, in the last, in the previous Sixers and Pistons game earlier this year, they seemed to kind of be cool with each other on the court when they were playing against each other. There wasn't that usual trash talking or Embiid dunks on Drummond and then stares at him after the whistle, or a concerted effort to get Drummond to commit like four fouls in the first half. There wasn't really, it didn't have the spiciness that past Embiid and Drummond matchups have had. But I don't think there's really any actual beef between the two. But I don't, maybe you might have heard something on your end, but I don't see, from my vantage point here in California and watching just a bunch of Sixer games over, especially the majority of games for Embiid's career, I don't see any beef.
Well, I was just curious because, like you said, like there's a lot of guys who can't handle trash talk, and I think Joel backs it up, and that's also frustrating. But you also did touch on the fact you're really covering all my questions really well for me today. But Ben Simmons is out, and according to The Athletic, Shams Charania, he has a nerve impingement in his lower back, and he'll be reevaluated in 2 weeks, which sounds terrifying, but I think he'll be okay based on what I read, hopefully, as long as the Sixers medical staff isn't practicing legitimate voodoo. But do you think Philly is going to be able to I mean, Andre Drummond has been a bit of a mixed bag so far in Cleveland, but it's a legitimate big man matchup going into this game with against Cleveland. Do you think the Sixers are going to be able to reliably lean on Embiid like they did last night in Atlanta, where he ended up dropping 49 points and 14 rebounds?
Yes, I do think, well, especially, I mean, no offense to you, no offense to you guys, especially since the Cavs are a bottom feeding team in the Eastern Conference, the Sixers should be able to lean on Embiid heavily in this matchup. I am worried about, you know, the dearth of guards that can dribble a basketball on your team, because the Sixers seem to have some trouble with those, especially when you lose some of your point of attack defenders. And Ben now that we don't have Simmons, or for the first, Richardson has missed time with injury periodically, and that's kind of hurt us on the defensive end as well from a point of attack standpoint. But Embiid should be able, this should be a matchup Embiid should be able to dominate, and the Sixers should lean heavily on, especially that now that they know they won't have Ben for a while. So it should be another big, it should be another expected big night for Embiid. But, you know, Drummond is still, I think Drummond's a good player. And so I think he'll give Embiid some, he has some quickness factors that give Embiid a little bit of trouble, especially since he's been kind of nursing a knee injury. He has a wrap around that left knee every game. And Embiid has kind of not been the same defensive player that he has been in years past, although he's still really damn good. But I expect the Sixers to lean heavily on Embiid, basically for until Simmons comes back. Now, that's scary because that means you're going to be ramping up his minutes, and Embiid's basically admitted that he's been trying to coast until the playoffs. But this should be another matchup where Embiid should theoretically dominate his matchup.
I get that, and I agree with it. And I guess this leads into my next question before we wrap things up here. Give me your prediction on who you think is going to win this game, and if you have a gut feeling on a final score, go ahead. Do you think it's going to be comparable to your Philadelphia's win over Atlanta, or do you think it might be a bit more of a blowout? And I'm leaning towards a bit more of a blowout in this one.
Oh boy, trying to predict what's going to happen in a Sixer game is a really dicey proposition at this point. I mean, I expect the Sixers win. I think they'll win not comfortably, considering that they are terrible on the road. But, I mean, it's a team they should beat pretty handily. But I'm probably expecting a 10 to 15 point win. But honestly, it would not surprise me if this game went to like overtime and the Cavs eked out like a 2-point win, because that's just what this team has been doing to me and every other fan, every other Sixer fan. So don't hold me to it, or actually hold me to it if you want me to. But I fully expect at least a double digit point Sixer win.
Do you expect at least one, possibly two, made three-pointers by Tristan Thompson for me to rag you on in this game?
Yes, I was going to say, I expect Tristan Thompson to hit like two threes, and then your subsequent tagging me in a tweet about how Tristan Thompson has hit more threes than Ben Simmons. I expect all of it. There's all the possibilities in the world in this game, Evan.
I get that. Maybe I'll make it a bit more personal this time, and I'll shoot you a text instead of just like adding you on Twitter, because that is actually
you gotta commit to it. Do it all.
I guess that's fair. We have a few bits on here where I rag on Chris for hating the Joker, and he made me put the kibosh on that, so maybe this is my opportunity to do it. But Jordan and I will be right back to actually talk about how the Sixers are kind of a weird team to get a read on this year, and he definitely have a lot to talk about in that regard, so just stay tuned and we'll be right back with more Locked On Cavs. If you've been a listener of this podcast, I'm sure you've heard all the great advertisers working with Locked On to reach sports fans. But you may not know that Locked On Cavs is a great way for your local business to reach passionate Cavs fans just like you. Unlike any other podcast, Locked On gives your company the unique ability to reach local podcast listeners. Not just any podcast listener, a Locked On podcast listener. If your company wants to connect with Cavs fans and a predominantly male audience that is well-educated with disposable income, then let's put your company right here on this Locked On podcast. Local fans love to support local businesses. Text the word advertising to 33777. Or visit lockedonpodcasts.com/advertising and let us know who you are. We'll get our team to help your team achieve Locked On advertising success. Once again, text the word advertising to 33777 or visit lockedonpodcasts.com/advertising. We look forward to hearing from you. All right, we're back. Jordan, like I mentioned, Philadelphia has an overall record of 36-22, and heading into the season, had expectations of battle with the Milwaukee Bucks for Eastern Conference supremacy. Instead, it's more so been Milwaukee's world, and the rest of the Eastern Conference is living in it. And the last time both the Sixers and Bucks played, it resulted in an ugly 119-88 defeat for Philadelphia. And you actually made a video for your channel titled, "What the Hell Are the Sixers?" So, Jordan, I'm just going to give the floor to you. What the hell is wrong with the Sixers this season? And I know that's a loaded question.
I think even if you go to my video, "What the Hell Are the Sixers?" and you reach the end of it, you'll probably still come to the conclusion that I have, which is I still don't know. I really don't know. How would I describe the Sixers season? They're definitely a weird team. I think there's been a few things. One, I just go back to their home and their road record. I mean, I have just never seen a disparity like this from a team in a very long time. 27-2 at home, 9-20 on the road. That's one more road win than the Knicks, the Cavs, the Bulls. And it's a stark comparison. Just looking at all the numbers, it's a weird fitting team. If I could go back to one thing that I've been harping on since this team started struggling around, basically since the Christmas Day game against the Bucks the first time, where the Sixers shot the hell out of the ball and blew the Bucks out on national TV, the Sixers have just been erratic. And I would point to Al Horford, and I know that's the one player every Sixer fan will go back to, is the Al Horford signing has just, there's no other way to put it. It's been a disaster, and it's only been further cemented as a disaster since head coach Brett Brown decided to move Horford to the bench to basically be the backup center. You're committing $119 million to someone who's now going to be a backup big man, which, I mean, that's just a misallocation of resources. The Horford and Embiid pairing has just been awful. Just if you look at the numbers, they had a 99.3 offensive rating. And then you add Simmons to the mix, and it's 0.2 points per 100 possessions lower. So the 99.1, I believe it was the last time I checked, per cleaning the glass. So the main problem circles one around Horford, two, the Sixers for the third straight year in a row don't have a guard that could do something off of a live dribble besides Simmons, who really isn't a great half-court scorer anyway. It's a case of there's a lot of talent on this roster, but the pieces don't fit together. And how do you overcome ill-fitting pieces? They had to rely on maybe some unrealistic leaps in the games of Simmons and Embiid, mainly Simmons' ability to create in the half court off the dribble and Embiid's conditioning and decision making as a passer. And those things haven't progressed to the degree that is needed to overcome just a team that starts two power forwards, two centers, and a wing. And I think that's basically been the issue with this team. Another issue is their shooting. They hover around league average as a three point shooting team percentage wise, but in terms of attempts and makes, they don't really have guys who hunt three pointers, who are comfortable having quick triggers shooting the three ball, and that's kind of cramped the spacing a lot. And so it's a disappointment that Ben Simmons got hurt around this time, because when Brett Brown moved Al Horford to the bench for the Clippers game right before the All-Star break, you saw more space for Simmons and Embiid to operate. You saw Simmons and Embiid connect on more plays, and Al Horford in Simmons lineups, for as bad as Horford has been, Horford and Simmons only lineups have been dominant this year. So, but the problem with this team is Brett Brown has had to basically have two separate teams, and I just don't think you can win that way. It's a whole weird team, but weirdly enough, you see its ceiling, but you just see the lowest of lows in terms of valleys, and you just can't get a read on this team. It's very, I don't know if I'm even answering your question. It's just there's so many things going on with this team, right and wrong, that you just can't get a handle on them.
I think you answered it well when you first said, like, you don't really know, and then you really expounded upon it. Like, yeah, it sounds like it's a mess right now. And I was wondering, do you think Brett Brown deserves as much blame and criticism as he's gotten this year, or should it all fall squarely on Elton Brand, the general manager of Philadelphia?
You know my stance on Brett Brown, and
yeah,
I will argue with anyone who thinks Brett Brown is a bad coach, but that certainly does not mean that he hasn't had his, you know, hand in the mess here. I think maybe taking too long to go with the Horford decision, that's one thing. I think he could be rigid with his rotation. Some guys will have a shorter leash than others. Some guys will unexpectedly be in the doghouse for no apparent reason. They go games without playing. There's definitely things to criticize Brett Brown about, but you brought it up. It goes back to general manager Elton Brand. And if you really want to be honest, this can go all the way back, and I'm not going to relitigate it. That's for more Sixer-centric podcasts like the Rights to Ricky Sanchez and the Sixers Beat and all those great other great Sixer podcasts to delve into. But when Sam Hinkie was forced out of the front office back in spring of 2016, that's where it really all started. And it's just been a misallocation of resources going down from Brian Colangelo to now Elton Brand, whose staff is still made up of Colangelo people, and really up to ownership. It's crazy that we look at this roster now. The Sixers have had two summers to add a third star to pair next to Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons, and they commit that money to Al Horford. Tobias Harris, he was staying regardless. We had his bird rights. But the last big cap slot, you spend that money on Al Horford, and now you're finding out that he can't fit with your franchise center and your franchise point guard slash power forward masquerading as a point guard, and now he's moved to the bench. It's just, it's been a mismanagement of assets, and I always have been a proponent, or not a proponent, I guess, but I more so lean towards blaming the front office, whether it was Colangelo or Elton Brand, for the moves that they have made, that they have continuously made. And if it wasn't for the fact that Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid are so good that they could just churn out 50 wins no matter who's around them, no matter how ill-fitting the players are, we would be talking more about this front office, maybe not among the worst in the NBA, but definitely up there. I mean, some of the decisions have just been like, think about this. If, say, the money was reallocated over this past summer to a different place, mm-hmm. you spend what? Sacramento paid Dwayne Dedmon 3 years, $40 million. So what if you say, what if the Sixers signed Dwayne Dedmon to fill in the backup minutes whenever Embiid is out, which was a huge problem, especially in the Raptors series last year when you saw the on-off numbers. And then you address the guard thing that I was mentioning earlier. Like, maybe the Sixers could have been in on a trade for Malcolm Brogdon. I don't know if the Bucks would have done that, but they should have explored more options to add more guards around this team and get a viable backup for Embiid and better use their money that way. But instead, here we are with this weird, clunky team. Sixer fans are excited about getting Alec Burks and Glenn Robinson III for basically free from one of the worst teams in basketball. But in a way, we almost have a right to be excited about those players because they provide an outline or a baseline of a skill set that the Sixers have desperately needed for so long. And the fact that it's come down to this, considering all the assets that the Sixers have had when Hinkie left, you have to look at the front office. Brett Brown has certainly played his role in this, in terms of, you know, not finding a way to properly coalesce this roster. But in mm-hmm. some ways, I also don't blame him because it is a weird fitting roster. And I think it's impossible to basically put Horford and Embiid together, especially when for years now, Horford's best position has been center. No matter how much he hates it or has said publicly that he doesn't like to play center, it's just been a horrible roster construction management, bad asset management. You could just go all the way back to Brian Colangelo for that and Elton Brand now. And that's probably where I would point to the most.
Okay, well, let's play a fun hypothetical then, because you outlined a lot of the problems with the Sixers and clearly
let's go.
And you have definitely, I agree with a lot of what you said. Like, if Philadelphia prioritized guards this round that they're big guys with, and maybe not committing Simmons to power forward. You and I have had this conversation privately where, like, instead of committing him as a point guard, you slide him as the power forward and you don't sign Al Horford and you do all these other things. So let's say Elton Brand gets fired at the end of the season this year, whatever happens for Philadelphia, no matter what, it could be a championship or whatever. And the Sixers call you up, Jordan, and say, we want you to be the next general manager. What would be your plan for this summer for Philly? What would you prioritize so that you don't waste a year of Simmons and Embiid together?
First of all, I would probably be in the hospital with a heart attack considering I got offered a general manager job. But if this hypothetical situation were to turn out to be real and I had to decide what the first course of action would be this summer, I would be definitely calling all over the place to check the temperature on Al Horford and his and see who would be willing to take on his contract. Because the thing with Al Horford is, I know he has career lows across the board, but when I go back to the roster construction, it also really did a disservice to Al Horford, because Al Horford's bread and butter is playing center and being paired with guards in an or guards and, or a team whose philosophy is to run pick and roll, and so we can pop out and stretch to the 3-point line, pump fake, dribble, drive. Once you get the big man to pass you, once you get the opposing big man out from under the rim, drive past him, find shooters and cutters with this passing. Because there is Al Horford is still a good player. I don't want that to be misconstrued because I've been clamoring for him to come off the bench all year or most of the year. It's mainly because he needs to find a way to fit on this team and he is best used as the five. So I would gauge the temperature on or the market on Al Horford. And I know he has a bad contract, but there's part of me that wonders, like, we say all the time, oh, this contract's bad, or this contract's bad, or this contract's bad. But then those contracts get moved anyway in a trade, whether it's bad money for bad money, or, you know, a lot of people considered the Raptors or DeMar DeRozan's contract bad, but then Toronto trades him and they get Kawhi Leonard. And obviously that's through extenuating circumstances, but they were still able to move on from DeMar's contract, right? So... Mm-hmm. Part of me still wonders, like, maybe maybe check in and see how Portland feels about the CJ McCollum Dame Lillard duo, and whether they would do a deal that somehow centered around Horford and McCollum. And then I know if there are any Blazer fans listening to this podcast, they might freak out on me, but I'm just throwing out hypotheticals out here. You could get a nice pick and pop big to pair with Dame Lillard. You can maybe get more size among the guard and wings, and the Sixers can get, you know, a ball handler that could score at all three levels. And maybe you solve your issues that way. But I would definitely be gauging to see if I can move Horford. Because the thing is, next year, you want to re-sign Josh Richardson, and he still has one more year on his bargain bin deal, but he's a younger player. He's the ideal perimeter player to put next to someone like Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid. But signing Horford to this big contract and now basically conceding that this experiment isn't working, you have to start looking elsewhere for different avenues, because I would be worried about keeping Josh Richardson next summer and then say he walks next summer and you're stuck with Horford, an aging Al Horford, and that contract is still there sitting on your books. So that would be the absolute number one first big thing that I would do this summer. And I would also hope that now we're tracking the Oklahoma City Thunder's first round pick, which is top 20 protected this year, and hope that it falls outside of the top 20 so you can at least get a first round pick, because the Sixers don't own their first round pick. That's going to the Brooklyn Nets, I believe. So I would also be hoping to at least hope – I would be hoping that the Thunder's first round pick would convey to the Sixers this summer as well.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I think that's a pretty solid plan overall. And I think you and I actually did discuss initially a Horford for McCollum swap, and it made a lot of sense on paper. And I think that's something definitely that.
After you jokingly made a Ben Simmons to Portland trade.
Yeah. You know what? I like to get my jokes off to other people's expenses, but if it's the Cavs, no dice. So. Just real quick, before we wrap things up for this segment, just yes or no question. Do you think if Ben Simmons works this summer with fellow clutch client Tristan Thompson, he can finally add a reliable 3-point shot to his game?
Well, I mean, he worked with Darius Garland last summer, and that apparently didn't work. Maybe Ben Simmons does need help from Tristan Thompson, especially since, you know, he famously switched hands for his free throw form. Maybe Ben Simmons can finally switch to his right hand like Kevin O'Connor wanted all this time.
Hey, it could be a good start for sure, and I could stop ragging you on something and that joke could finally die. But until then, I'm going to ride that horse until it collapses, and I'll still keep going with it. All right, we're going to take another quick break before Jordan and I discuss Cleveland's rebuild and what he likes from an outsider's perspective. Stay tuned for more Locked On Cavs. All All right, gang, we're back. And Jordan, you know pretty well what a lengthy rebuild is like after sitting through all the years of the process. Cleveland is going through a rebuild of their own, but they're calling it the Renaissance, which doesn't have as nice of a ring to it. But I'm going to just ask you, how do you think the Cavs are doing 2 years into life after LeBron James?
Well, life after LeBron James is never easy. As I'm sure you guys well know, especially after the first time he left. But I'm worried. I'm not worried about your guys' rebuild. The stuff that's been coming out of not only the front office, but the whole Beeline situation, I just get worried when a team is rebuilding and they can't seem to get out of their own way as a front office. I'm always worried about that type of stuff just because I think you need to be able to pull off a rebuild the right way, commit to it, which they seem to be doing. But I do like some of the Cavs' young talent. I saw a couple of USC games with Kevin Porter Jr., and it's only a few games, so I'm not going to try to act like I was an expert on him pre-draft or anything. But I'm always down for my lefty people. I'm a left-handed player when I play pickup hoops, so I always have a soft spot for guys like Ginobili, James Harden, and Kevin Porter Jr. could be right up there. I just really like his talent. I like his herky-jerky style of play. I like his size as a guard. He's had a few good showings this year, like against the Rockets, last night against, or I guess it would be Sunday against, or Monday against Miami, excuse me. I like Darius Garland. Colin Sexton, I told you my thoughts on Colin Sexton last year pre-draft. Maybe his destiny is a sixth man, but I like that he has, you know, improved as a shooter coming out of college. I still like his intensity, or I guess his willingness to play defense. You guys have joked about it too. There's issues with him as a passer and how he doesn't pass the ball. And so maybe this sixth man role will be his ultimate destiny, but I like the guards that you have. I'm just, as a Sixer fan, I'm just jealous that you guys have guards that could, like, literally four of the Cavs guards could be the first guy off the Sixer bench. And which is saying a lot, but, I also like the trade you guys made for Drummond. I still think he's a good, I think anybody who grabs rebounds with ease, like he does, say what you want about his offensive rebounding numbers and if they're padded or not or whatever. But I just think he was a good gamble for you guys to take a chance on. But you know, just keep doing what you guys are doing. Just keep losing a lot of games and just keep draft. And, you know, some of these lottery picks will eventually hit, which is kind of basically the genesis of the process, or the Renaissance, as you guys like to call it. Weirdly enough, I watched a lot of Cavs games early on, kind of stopped in the December, January, but obviously I keep up with your reporting on it. The Athletic's reporting on the Cavs and, you know, following the news all the time. But guys like Kevin Porter Jr. and, you know, Darius Garland, guys who can score, create off the dribble, I'm always a big proponent of. But we'll see what goes on in down the road. Mm-hmm. I don't know if JB Bickerstaff, he seems to have every interim job that comes that that happen. He seems to have every interim job known to man over the last decade or so. But I like what you guys are doing. I just wish the front office was more stable, I guess, to head a rebuild like this, because I just, speaking from experience, if you want to commit to a plan, you have to just do it, and you can't, you know, bow out midstream, which is what Sixers ownership did when they pulled in Adam Silver for a consultation, and then they brought on Jerry Colangelo, who brings on Brian Colangelo, and we all know how that story went. So if you're going to commit to this rebuild, just stick to it, is what I would say.
I think that's pretty solid advice, and Chris and I both have touched base on just having legitimate concerns, and our Monday episode, shout out to James Rapine, friend of the pod, just kind of put that fear in the back of my mind that maybe Dan Gilbert will get impatient with this and want to make a last or a desperation move to get into the playoffs. So I hope that's not the case. So just kind of hoping things keep going forward. But I'm going to touch on Kevin Porter Jr., who this podcast is a big Kevin Porter Jr. advocate podcast. Chris lovingly called it Locked On Kevin Porter last night. So
I respect it.
It's got potential for sure, but Philadelphia has a rookie of their own in Matisse Thybulle, and now I'm going to ask you a tough question. Would you rather have Matisse Thybulle or Kevin Porter Jr. on the Sixers at this very moment?
Oh, boy. Wow, you really put me on the spot here with that one. As much as I love Matisse Thybulle, and he is one of the best rookie defenders I have seen coming out of the draft in a long time. And just in terms of coming out of the draft and then just having an immediate impact on a team. Mm-hmm. Just considering that I want somebody who can create off of a live dribble, just something off of a live dribble, scoring. Uh-huh. Kevin Porter Jr. also showed some nifty passes in his big games that he's had this season. I would have to go with Kevin Porter Jr. just because we need a guard. And I love Thybulle. Maybe Thybulle has some outlier developments in terms of, you know, creating off the dribble or something like that, but I just don't see it. He's a decent passer. He can move the ball around. Hit the open guy, and his 3-point shooting has been better than advertised. His defense, especially his 1-on-1 defense, has been way better than advertised coming out of college, considering he was known as a great team defender and he kind of got knocked a little bit for playing zone a lot in his senior season at Washington. Thybulle's been special defensively, but for what this team needs right now, I wanted the Sixers actually to take Kevin Porter Jr. as he started falling into the later round, into the 20s. Wasn't he taken 20th?
No, he was taken third by the Detroit Pistons, and Cleveland bundled 4 second rounders and cash considerations to get him because the Cavs viewed him as a top 10 talent at the time.
Yeah, okay. So, He was somebody that showed flashes of just, you know, insane scoring potential. I don't know what his ceiling would have been as a player, but somebody who can just cook players off the dribble with his style of play, I just think that would be something the Sixers would largely benefit from. Sorry, Matisse Thybulle, I love you, but for what this team needs, I would probably take Kevin Porter Jr. for sure.
So let me ask you then, are you leaving the mic? Would you get kicked out of the Mike Scott hive for that comment, you think? I know it's not Mike Scott, but that you're selling out one of Philly's players here for one of Cleveland's players. So I'm curious.
I know I'd probably get killed for this too, but I never really identified with the Mike Scott hive. I love the press conferences that Mike Scott gives and the whole his quotes and all that stuff, but I've never been really a part of it. And he's been just god awful this year, literally unplayable. So, as somebody who is a West Coast Sixer fan and is not in. Who has grown up on the West Coast his entire life. I'm not part of the hives and the subgroups that in Philly as much as I would love to, you know, go to a game and just be a part of that environment. But I don't know. I just know what this team needs right now. And as much as it kills me to sacrifice Matisse Thybulle in a hypothetical Kevin Porter trade straight up, I would definitely take it.
And that's totally okay.
Don't kill me, Twitter, please.
Yeah, no, I mean, maybe Cookie Hoops calls you a boomer, but Jordan, I'll tell you the fact.
I'll get called a boomer by Cookie Hoops if I say something about Ben Simmons not shooting the three. That's their brand.
See, like, they've done it to me. You've done it to me. I'm waiting, man. I'm armed and ready for tomorrow. But just on the subject of the Kevin Porter Hive, I told Chris privately once, and I told other people this, like, it was a train that had steady momentum the moment he was drafted. Like, there was a lot to be excited about. And then he had that coming out game against the Rockets, and it started to, like, rock on the rails a little bit. And then that game last night against Miami, like, it went off a cliff into the valley, and, like, there's no looking back. So if you want to join the Kevin Porter Hive, man, we will welcome you with open arms, and we will not criticize any of your takes, because the Cavs suck so much that we have to find some type of pleasure in this misery. But
I wanted the Sixers to take him as he was falling down. So I was an early applicant, but I hope I get my acceptance letter now, and so I can join the Hive.
That's like Hogwarts. You just wait for the Al to drop off your acceptance letter, because I know for a fact you'd be accepted as one of us. But you touched a little bit on J.B. Bickerstaff and how he's kind of had this path as an interim head coach with his time in Houston and his time in Memphis. And it turns out that he isn't the interim in Cleveland. This is actually Cleveland's plan all along, was for, as I learned today from Chris Fedor's podcast, and I've been kind of hearing the same thing from within the team, that it was written in Bickerstaff's contract that he would be the successor to Boeheim whenever John Boeheim decided to hang it up. No one expected him to hang it up 54 games into the year, for sure. But I guess my question for you is, do you think J.B. Bickerstaff is the right guy to see this renaissance through to the Enlightenment? Or do you think the Cavs should kind of follow a similar path to Atlanta with Lloyd Pierce, who I know you were a fan of the hire at the time, and this is just going to be a thorny question for you because I know you're a Brett Brown guy, but if Brett Brown is available, do you think the Cavs should offer him a contract immediately to guide this team through a rebuild?
Yes to that. I don't know how willing. I have no clue or any information or anything like that Brett Brown would be willing to accept another rebuild, but I couldn't imagine he could stomach another one. But if he was available, the Cavs should absolutely go for him. Just in general, I think they should get somebody who is not, you know, a college coach, not a college coach, but also not a retread if they were to move on, or if for some reason the Cavs don't think Bickerstaff is the guy in the long term. I would more aim towards, you know, some of the younger assistants or something like that to head a rebuild. So because I like the synergy of a younger up-and-coming assistant growing with a young, you know, malleable team, because at that point the team is in clay form, so to speak, so you could just shape it and mold it into whatever you want it to be. Mm-hmm. I just think you'll get more stability that way. But if somebody like Brett Brown was available, I'm biased because I think he's a good coach, but if someone like him were available, if I were the Cavs, I would definitely make an offer to him.
Makes sense to me, and I'm glad. I think you and I are on a similar path here, where I don't know if J.B. Bickerstaff is the final answer for the Cavs. I doubt he will be. The team has gone through, I think, 7 coaches in the last decade, which is incredible. And that's not including the fact that Mike Brown had 2 separate stints at the team. So they got to find some type of stability, and I think hiring a young assistant to grow, and like you said, this team's like clay, like, let the assistant just kind of mold this team in his vision, and alongside the front office's decision, is the right call. And I don't know what the Cavs are really doing in that regard, but if J.B. Bickerstaff gives like a semblance of normalcy and maybe keeps the Cavs out of the news for all the wrong reasons, I'll take it. But no, I agree with you. I think if Brett Brown's available, absolutely jump on it if he's willing to stomach a rebuild, but if not, grab a lead assistant or a young assistant who could guide this team.
I saw a tweet about something about the Cavs head coaches. Basically, how many coaches has it been? Because I know there were three different... No, there were 2 changes when LeBron came back, and then there have been many more since. How many coaches was it?
Are we talking since LeBron came back?
Yeah, I saw a tweet detailing that. So,
So the summer LeBron came back, the Cavs relieved Mike Brown of his duties after the second stint, and they hired David Blatt to, I believe from what I've heard, was to coach a team that was centered around like Andrew Wiggins and Kyrie Irving and all these young players. And then LeBron kind of changed things, and then they reached the NBA Finals. So that's, I guess if you want to include Mike Brown, that's two coaches there. David Blatt's fired midway into his second season, and Ty Lue is hired. And that rides out through the remainder of LeBron's time here. And then LeBron leaves and goes to Los Angeles. Ty Lue is fired maybe 5, 6, 7 games into the season. And then you have Larry Drew, so that makes 4. And then after Larry Drew is John Beilein, so that makes 5. And then after John Beilein, now it's J.B. Bickerstaff, so that makes 6. So in the last 4, 5, 6 years, the Cavs have gone through 7 coaches, which is pretty bad.
Wow, that's crazy. Yeah, you can't, when you're going through a rebuild like this, that's the one thing I would probably say is I would just like a bit more stability. Like, there's obviously stability in terms of, or instability in terms of winning and losing games, but like we both just agreed on, just maybe a young up and coming assistant or something like that. You just a coach that'll be there through to see the growth of this young team is just to bring some stability would be really good for the Cavs, because you guys got some talent that I really like. You just got to hope for, you know, just stability to guide that growth is what I'm saying.
No, I get that for sure. And I think that's a good place for us to stop, because I don't want to keep recanting to everybody how abnormal the Cavs are. And I know Chris is listening right now because he has to edit this. So he is probably just quietly shaking his head in agreement that this is the most abnormal team, if not one of the most abnormal teams in the NBA. But that's going to do it for Jordan and I today. Jordan, I just wanted to thank you again for coming on the show and hanging out with me. But as a friend, and both as a friend and a peer, it's been amazing to watch you grow in so many different mediums. And before I let you go, is there anything yours you'd like to personally plug? And can you tell the fine folks at home where they can find you? I know you just came back to Twitter reluctantly, so they can find you there.
Yeah, this is my third time coming back to Twitter. My Twitter account is at Christmas, KFBK, Christmas like the holiday, and then KFBK. Those are the call letters for my radio station, iHeartMedia here in Sacramento. You could subscribe to my YouTube channel, Sly Hooper, where you can watch all kinds of videos on me talking about basically just hoops and whatever else comes to mind. It's really just a free form channel where I do whatever I want, but it's mainly basketball centric. And you can also follow my Sly Hooper YouTube channel's Twitter and Instagram at Sly Hooper X. Also, you could go to KFBK.com. I don't cover the Kings full time. I'm basically doing whatever I can on the side outside of my full time work schedule. So you could go to KFBK.com and you'll occasionally hear on air reports from me about the Kings and sports going on in Sacramento. It's an up and coming city. And I am really lucky and glad that I became full-time in a market that is really tough, especially radio. So I'm grateful for that. And just shoot me a follow.
And you guys would be missing out if you're not following Jordan, because you can also see my hilarious same joke that I always drop on him, because I'm really uncreative and I need to workshop some more ideas. But thanks again, really, Jordan. And thank you to everyone who tuned in today. Chris and I will be back tomorrow to recap the tilt between Philadelphia and Cleveland and discuss whatever that day holds for us. Hopefully good things, but you never know with the Cavs. Until next time, go Cavs.